How did this tradition get started? I'll tell you. I don't know.
But it's a tradition. And because of our traditions, every one of us knows who he is and what God expects him to do.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Torah. I am Rabbi Tzvi Jacobson with NRM Streamcast, and we'll spend our time talking Torah, learning stuff, and having fun while we learn. You can always send your questions and comments to our mailbag at letstalktorah@gmail.com, and of course, I will answer as many as I can, or you can check out our amazing webpage at letstalktorah.net, no apostrophes, letstalktorah.net. And you can find the archives and the newest shows and comments, questions, whatever you want. You ask them, we'll answer them. Just had somebody set up for after Passover. We're gonna have a guest on the show in a couple weeks. And it's just an easy way. If somebody wants to join the show, send the message. I get the messages. It's great. It's fantastic. And, of course, there's the all-important donate button. You can hit that donate button. You can help the show grow. We have different levels for you. If you want a shout-out, a happy birthday, anniversary, in memory of, or in memory of and keep it anonymous, we can do that as well. Whatever works for you, of course, works for all of us around here. So you may be aware, if you live in this world, there is going to be an eclipse next week, Monday. We actually are sending the children home early from school. They're afraid. And a lot of schools are closing. Most schools, I think, are closing the whole day. They're afraid, for good reason, that since dismissal time is, like, not the full eclipse. I think the full eclipse, at least here around Detroit, we're going to be like 99%. That's close enough. But I know people are driving down to Toledo. But children are children, right? So how are you going to make sure that all these children, when they're outside waiting for the buses, are not going to want to look up? Because you can look up at the sky. It's not going to burn your eyes. At least you don't think it's going to burn your eyes. And, yeah, and you could try to tell everybody they have to wear the glasses and they can't look up. But it's a very hard thing to take responsibility for, even people driving, right? The sun's right there. Like, how are you not looking at it? So you really got to have those glasses. Don't worry, I bought a whole pack. I have like 20 of them or something. Because I remember last time, by the time I woke up and wanted to buy glasses, you know, it was $10 of glasses, $50 of glasses, $100 for a pair of glasses. I had a brother-in-law had some extra for me. But this time I bought a whole bunch, give them to my kids. I'll even probably give them extra if a friend needs or something. So the eclipse is coming and they're going to end school early, let the children get home, parents can take care of them. You want to have glasses, look at to see what it looks like. I mean, I'm fascinated. I think it's amazing. And I just saw something, and I forgot to write down the name of what it's called. I think it begins with a P. It's a funny word. But there's a certain effect. And the effect is that green colors becomes brighter, red colors become duller. It has to do with, I guess, the rays of the sun, and when you see the brightness of the sun, when you don't see the brightness. So they want people like wearing like Christmas colors. But in any case, the world is a fascinating place. And one of the fascinating topics in this week's Torah portion is kosher animals. Why is it fascinating? For many reasons. We're going to, as we get through the different pieces of what makes something kosher, at least to the animal kingdom, we'll see a lot of fascinating ideas. But before we get to what makes something kosher, I think we need to discuss first why kosher. And would kosher be a reason for even somebody who's not Jewish to keep kosher? So it seems, according to Maimonides, there would be a reason for everyone to keep kosher. And that's why, you know, during the Black Plague, they were blaming it on people coming from pigs or something. And the Jews were therefore responsible because they weren't getting the Black Plague, which wasn't true. The Black Plague affected the Jewish populace as much as anybody else in Europe. But it was a good thing to blame Jews on because, like, why not? But everybody, for the most part, argues on Maimonides. They said it has nothing to do with health. It is not a health thing that the Torah is telling us to keep kosher. So what is it? So most of the commentaries say that when a Jewish person only eats non-kosher, it leaves a mark. It has an effect. It affects our spirituality. It's fascinating. The last show we're talking about day eight, and eight is a spiritual number. Kosher is also a spiritual concept. Not only that, it says that for a Jewish person, if he doesn't keep kosher, even when he repents, generally speaking, repenting wipes out the sin. Not only that, it says repenting has the ability to take a sin and turn it into a positive. That's how powerful repenting is. And to a certain extent, that would be true if a person eats something that's not kosher. The problem is that it has an effect on our soul. And it says it stuffs up the heart. It makes Torah study more difficult. The damage is done. Sam Shavuel Hirsch talks a lot about this. He says this command of keeping kosher, God gave the Jewish people a path to play as a spiritual function in this world, right? When people say you are what you eat, spiritually in this case, right? As Maimonides takes it, you are what you eat, that it affects you health-wise. But others are learning that you are what you eat as far, again, it doesn't mean you have to become a vegetarian. As those who want to be vegetarians say, if you eat a cow, so you should have tendencies of a cow, or a goat, or a sheep, or a chicken, right? And there's no way for me to answer this question, right? And as God said, these animals you could eat, and spiritually it will not have an effect. Maybe it will have a good effect on you. Perhaps there is, I believe it's Rabbeinu Bechaya, it could be to Ramban as well, that if you notice which animals we're allowed to eat, they're all animals that are chaste, not the chaser. We don't eat the chaser. We eat the chasee, if there is such a word, right? The animals that are hunted, right? The lions, they're hunting the cows, wolves, right? They're always worried about coyotes, wolves, right? Farmers always worried about them because they're attacking their livestock, right? Cows do not hunt. Cows eat grass, right? You know, sheep do not hunt. Goats do not hunt. Deer certainly don't hunt, right? They're the ones that are hunted, right? So, and for the most part, that's the meats that people eat because maybe it's just easier to get to. But the point is that even to eat meat, so God says this meat you can eat because those are the animals that are chaste. And God protects those that are chaste, right? So it becomes fascinating. I'm not saying that you can't eat meat because it makes you into an animal, even though we say you are what you eat. You eat a tomato, you're not a tomato, right? But spiritually, eating non-kosher affects my ability to study what kind of person I become. Non-kosher food corrupts. But again, only somebody Jewish because he, the Jewish person, is the one who has to be spiritual. So does it mean that a non-Jew can't be spiritual? He doesn't have that command, so it shouldn't affect him. there are commands, there's seven Noahide laws, and none of them have to do with keeping kosher. So it would seem it shouldn't be an issue at all. It's an interesting thing to think about. All the kosher animals have two kosher signs, like witnesses. In the Torah, the rule is that two witnesses are what we need to prove anything. Nothing is proven by one witness. Okay, you go to court and you have one witness that Reuven killed Shimon. The court won't do anything. One witness has zero value. Two witnesses is all we need. Two witnesses is it's a done deal. It's a done deal. So animals, to be kosher, need like two witnesses. So it is interesting. The in the list of kosher animals, right? So you have your we'll call them farm animals for lack of a better word, cows, right? They have to have split hooves, totally split, and they have to chew their cud. If you don't know what that means, go hang out on a farm. But what it really means is that the digestive system of an animal is different than a human. As we eat something and our stomachs just totally break it down, and then it gets the junk becomes waste, gets filtered out, and the good stuff that our body needs and can use, that gets put back into our system. And however the body transports everything that has to be transported, that of course is a subject for another day. Grasshoppers have two signs. Like, their wings have to, like, cover the body, and they have this extra pair of jumping legs. It could be locusts, grasshoppers. There's four kinds that are kosher. We'll talk about this. It's interesting. If you come, we've talked about this in the past, if you come from Middle Eastern countries where grasshoppers or locusts were eaten, they knew which ones were kosher. So they have what we call a Kabbalah that they know from parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents. They know what a kosher locust or grasshopper is. The European Jews did not have this Kabbalah. They didn't have this, the word is slipping my mind for now. They don't have great great grandparents to tell them what they were allowed to eat as far as the grasshoppers, so therefore they don't eat it. This will be important by birds coming up, by the way. Fish have fins, right? That's what gives them, they keeps them, right, balanced, and scales. Now, scales, by the way, means that they easily come off. The scales easily come off, and even that, I was reading, it's debatable what's called easy to come off. Like some fish, you have to, maybe sturgeon, you have to like cook the fish to make the skins, the scales come off easily. And it's debatable amongst the rabbis. There's certain fish, swordfish and marlins, and again, the sturgeon. This has been a debate for hundreds of years on some of those fish. And like all things, the fact that it became debatable, it's just easier to say we're not doing it. Like, there's enough fish. You can have your tuna fish and your salmon and your perch or whatever. The only animal in the animal kingdom, right? We talk about fish and these grasshoppers and the cows and goats and sheep. And that carries over, by the way, to the deer and to that whole deer family. I guess the antelopes and the, I don't know what, to all those animals. And we're also kosher. Kosher birds is really just the opposite. In the Torah, the Torah doesn't mention what makes a bird kosher. It happens to be the rabbis do. And we're going to talk about that later, what the signs are. One of them, which goes back to what we're talking about, the hunting birds are not kosher. And the question is, what does it mean, hunting birds? It's a way that they eat, and it's if they like hold down the prey with one hand and the other hand like rips it, and then it eats the meat or whatever it's eating. We're going to talk about it, but hunting type birds are not kosher. Birds, it seems, birds would be hunted, but a lot of birds get hunted. Even the hunting bird gets hunted by other birds. So that we'll try to get into, but it also has to have like a toe. Yeah, it's like the three fingers in front, the one toe in the back, makes it, I believe, into a kosher bird, or it's the opposite. We'll see momentarily. I have to look at my notes. I mean, that has to do with its gizzard and crap, and it's got to be peeled. I don't know what that means even. I have no idea. But what's interesting is the Torah actually lists the non-kosher birds. It lists the non-kosher birds, and if you're not on the list, you're kosher. But of course, like all things, like, how do I know if it's a cousin? Right? How do I know which birds are in this family, right? When the Torah lists the list of birds that are not kosher, so if you're in that family, you're not kosher. But we don't know what these words mean. We don't know how to translate all these birds. Even that's been debatable. Even at the time of the Talmud, they didn't even know what all these birds were. So therefore, basically the rule is, and this is something I want to spend time talking about, basically the rule is only if it's a bird that we've always been eating is kosher, and otherwise a problem. And we're going to talk about the turkey in a couple of minutes. One of the fascinating things that happens in this week's Torah portion is the Torah actually tells me that there are four animals that only have one of the two signs, meaning it either has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud, or it chews its cud, and it doesn't have split hooves. And even, by the way, in that list, it's debatable what one of those animals are, if it's a type of hare or a rock rabbit. They have a very hard time trying to figure out why that animal is considered that it chews its cud. But the fact of the matter is, the Torah says there's four animals, right? Camel chews its cud, doesn't have split hooves. The hooves are a little split, but not totally split. The pig has split hooves. It doesn't chew its cud. The pig is the only animal, by the way, with fully split hooves, but doesn't chew its cud. But in the pig family, by the way, you have the hippopotamus. If you look at the Latin family of what family is the hippopotamus in, it happens to be it's in the pig family. So those are the only animals you'll see with split hooves, but they don't chew their cud. And there's another two animals, and I'm not really sure what they are, because they say rock rabbit or hare or something, and it's hard to figure out exactly why it's considered that they chew their cud. But that is something to think about, right? The Torah is given to the Jewish people, millions of people in the desert. We lived in Egypt, right? We were not zoologists, if that's the right word. How many animals have we even seen? And even nowadays, they're always discovering new animals in the depths of Madagascar, or the Amazon rainforest, and they're fine. New Zealand, there are places, islands, that there are new animals that have been discovered over the last 3,300 years that they didn't even know about in the time of when we received the Torah. So if the Torah was written by God, okay, so God knows all the animals. He has no problem. God has no problem writing that there's four animals with one sign, not two signs. And no one's discovered in 3,300 years any new breed of animal that's got one and not the other, which is amazing. But no man, no human being in his right mind, could be a lady, right? No human being in their right mind would ever go ahead and say, you will never, ever in history find an animal with one sign and not two signs. There's no such thing. Because it was written by God. If you need a proof, this week's Torah portion is the proof. But I want to take some time to talk about the turkey. And I like turkey. I mean, it's more dark meat. I used to actually eat turkey necks. We would actually put turkey necks in our chalent. It's a Shabbos dish. Very sweet. The turkey neck, it's bigger than a regular chicken neck. There's actually a little bit of meat on it. As a kid growing up, I loved the drumstick of the turkey. I loved that. That was like, you know, I enjoyed that. But even cold cuts, right? Turkey pastrami, right? So the problem is like this. If you say that the only nowadays, since we don't know how to exactly identify which birds are which, we're afraid to identify that this is a kosher bird and this is not a kosher bird, even though the Talmud has its own signs. I'd eat turkey. The turkey is a North American bird. They didn't have it in Europe. They didn't have it in Africa. Right? So I'm not saying that Moses didn't have turkey. Maybe he did. I have no idea. Right? It's a little bit irrelevant. Right? But for hundreds, thousands of years, nobody knew what a turkey was. If nobody knew what a turkey was, that means your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-great-great never saw a turkey. So it's beautiful that it may seem to have all the signs of a kosher bird. But if our grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents never ate it, then we don't eat it. But everybody eats turkey. Almost everybody. So the question is, right, so how do you eat? So as we said before, the four signs, I've written my notes over here, it's called pouncing, this extra toe, which is facing the other way, and the crab and the gizzard can be easily peeled, fine. The fact of the matter is, right, how do we eat the turkey? How? Very interesting. How is it that we ate it? So it seems, for whatever strange reason, when turkeys were brought back to Europe, and it became available, all the Jews in Europe started eating it. So now it's a little bit backwards. Now, by the way, they didn't even know that the turkey was native to America. In Hebrew, the turkey is called the tarnagol. Tarnagol is usually a rooster, a chicken. Hodu. Hodu is India. They thought it was called the Indian chicken. They thought it came from India. And therefore, they believed that the Indians had a tradition that it was kosher. So they started eating it. So now, here it's like backwards. As the rule is, I can't start eating something that I don't have a tradition for. But just because I never had a tradition, I can't make something forbidden. Now, if I have a tradition that it's forbidden, you could tell me that no one can eat it. But if there was never a tradition to forbid the turkey, and all of a sudden everybody's eating it, even though they shouldn't have been, you can't make it forbidden. Right? That's fascinating. Another interesting answer is this concept that we wouldn't eat birds unless we had a tradition to eat them, that tradition didn't start till the late 1500s. And we were already eating the turkey by then. It's an interesting idea. And another possible answer is that it seems, again, this is not my department, but it seems you can crossbreed turkeys and chickens. They're cousins. I don't think you could just crossbreed any bird that you want. The only birds that crossbreed are birds that are related. Like they're in the same family. To be able to crossbreed birds, again, this I don't know if this is true, but there are those who want to say that the fact that it can be crossbred means a cousin, therefore they allow it to be eaten. Okay. So the turkey is called Hodu, which, again, the country Hodu is India. But the word Hodu happens to mean, in Hebrew, happens to mean thank you. So I saw a story. The joint, that's the joint distribution, they're called the joint. They supported Jews in Europe. They exist nowadays. Their purpose is to support Jews in need. That is their purpose. When things were going on in Ukraine, when the war started, trying to get Jews out of Ukraine, all of a sudden they, you know, raised millions of dollars to take care of Ukrainian Jews. I'm sure they raised millions, millions, hundreds of millions to take care of Israel when the war started. In 1929, because of the stock market crash, their funds ran very low. And they hit, at one point, they were supporting a lot of Jewish schools in Europe, a lot of yeshivas, and they didn't know what to do. So they went to the Chafetz Chaim. And they said to him, what should we do? How should we approach them? We're not being, they're taking away our support. And the Chafetz Chaim said, you should say thank you. Right? And they can't support you, they can't support you, but at least thank them for what they've done in the past. That you have to be able to do. Okay. Let's fast forward. Corona was not so long ago. Oh, we can't finish the story. Maybe next week we'll finish the story. But anyways, the music is playing. I hope you enjoyed it short and sweet. Thank you, of course, to all our wonderful sponsors and listeners. You know, I can't do it without you. Thank you to my wonderful production team. I have Alan in the back today. I hope I've left you with some food for thought. Until next time, I am Rabbi Tzvi Jacobs, and you've been listening to Let's Talk Torah on NRM Streamcast. Until next time, don't forget to think about it.
There's a house we can build. Every room inside is filled with things from far away. Special things.